So we began this verse yesterday, so we'll try and finish the purport today. The verse again is Painya Patim Prasya Grihanupagatam Vilokya Sanjata Mano Mahotsava Utashtu Arat Sahas Sasan Sanayat Sakam Vritir Vridita Lochananana. And the word for word again is the ladies, Patya, queens, the wives of Krishna, Patim, husband, Prasya, who was away from home, Griha Anupagatam, now returned home, Vilokya, thus seeing, Sanjata, having developed, Mana Mahautsava, a sense of joyful ceremony within the mind. This will all come in the second section of this purport. We'll speak more about this particular part of the verse. They utastu, they got up, and arat, they got up, and from a distance, sahasa, all of a sudden, from their seats, their asana, asayat, from the state of meditation, so come along with, vratai, the vow, vridita, they became very coy, lochana, the eyes, and anana, with such faces. So the translation again. The queens of Lord Sri Krishna rejoiced within their minds to see their husband home after a long period abroad. The queens got up at once from their seats and meditations. As was socially customary, they covered their faces shyly and looked about coyly. So we spoke already in the purport, in the first half of the purport, about the nature of the Absolute or the Supreme or God, that He is unlimited. And so when He wants, He can expand Himself into unlimited, identically powerful forms, which He has done in this case. So when He, every day when Krishna comes to the assembly house, because if you think like this, if he is 16,108 Krishnas, they will all meet each other, right? They walk out of their houses and their palaces and they all meet each other. It's confusing. But His mystic power, His internal mystic power is so perfect that as soon as He steps out of the home, He becomes one. So there's one and one. And so when He comes to the assembly house, only one Krishna comes to the assembly house, Sudharma, for the meetings of the city leaders, and also for King, to see King Ugrasena. But at home, in His private quarters, He's many. And just to see this, actually, Narada Muni went to Dwarka, because he had heard about this, but it was just so inconceivable that he wanted to see it as well. And it was such a mystical experience that when he went from house to house to house to house, and saw Krishna in each one of his palaces, palace to palace to palace, he saw that Krishna was dealing differently with each one of the queens, that some of the queens had young children, some of the queens had grown-up children, and the children were getting married. The time of the day was different in each particular place. Somewhere he was sitting with his queens and it was evening. Some places he was sitting and he was discussing what he was going to do during the day. Sometimes he was reading books about the Absolute Truth. Sometimes he was discussing how he should go incognito into Dwarka and see if there were any dissatisfactions amongst the citizens. So he was acting the whole array, you could say, of an ordinary person's life. All the different aspects were taking place simultaneously in all the different Vasudev, Devaki, Maharaj Ugrasena might walk in. All the relatives walked in. It wasn't just limited to two or three. It was an unlimited array of people could come there simultaneously, could be there, could be there. So this is so totally beyond the range of what an ordinary human being can imagine doing, that naturally enough, what the ordinary human beings, particularly the scholars, say is that this is just some mythology, because it's not possible. We've never seen such a thing. We've never seen somebody marry 16,000 wives. So obviously it didn't happen, because we couldn't do it. So therefore, in the beginning of this purport, the Acharyas and Srila Prabhupada give so many statements to help us to understand that God is never like an ordinary human being. He has unlimited power. He has created everything in existence. And that we are part of Him, particles of Him, and yet He's totally separate from us, and He pervades the whole material energy, the whole material universes and creation. And interestingly enough, most people don't find Him anywhere. Wherever they look, wherever they go, they don't find evidence of God. They analyze scientifically, they teach in school scientific analyzing of how things were done, why they were done, but who did it, they have no information at all. So the second half of the purport, it goes more into the Leela side. Therefore, as soon as the queen saw from a distance their husband, who was away from home for long periods due to the battle of Kurukshetra, they all arose from the slumber of meditation and prepared to receive their most beloved. So Krishna sometimes, as we read earlier in this chapter, the queens and the citizens of Dwarka, they missed him when sometimes he would go to Hastinapur. Sometimes he would go to Mathura, and sometimes it is said he would even go to Vrindavan. So when he was away, how did the citizens feel? What did they do? According to Yajnavalkya's religious injunctions, a woman whose husband is away from home should not take part in any social functions, should not decorate her body, should not laugh, and should not go to any relative's house in any circumstances. This is the vow of the ladies whose husbands are away from home. At the same time, it is also enjoined that a wife should never present herself before the husband in an unclean state. She should decorate herself with ornaments and good dress, and should always be present before the husband in a happy and joyous mood. So these are codes of behavior in the Vedic culture. You can see that they would be very incompatible with modern society, because modern society is not based on permanence. It's based on the quick, as quick as possible and as much as possible, experience of personal sense enjoyment. So if my husband was going to be away, why should I follow these things? Why should I suffer because he's away? That seems to be like, why? Why should I bother? So do any of the ladies know why he would do those things? Why in a different culture, in a different time, the ladies did this? Can anyone guess? Yes.
They were attempting to remain chaste.
They were attempting to remain chaste. And they are attempting to remain subordinate. And they are attempting to remain in the mood of being enjoyed. And this is actually the mood that all of Prakriti, or all of the material energy, or all the tatastha, remember we spoke yesterday, there was the superior energy, the inferior material energy, and the tatastha, the middle, like where the waves come up, and it becomes the ocean, and the waves, the low tide, it becomes the seashore. So this tatastha, the jivas, ourselves, we are meant to be enjoyed. And we have chosen instead to become enjoyed, to seek enjoyment, to find enjoyment, to enjoy. And ironically, even though we've got all the freedom that we want, apparently, we actually never stably get the satisfaction of enjoying. Because the material world is made in such a way that all the time one is dominated by its laws. For example, there's 24 hours in a day. You can't extend that if you want. And then there's years, and then there's old age, and then there's death, and all these things are going in cycles, and you can't change them. There's so much regulation in the material world, inbuilt in material energy, that the jiva doesn't, and what we do is we say, okay, I can handle all of that, and still I'm going to enjoy. I'll enjoy the 24 hours. I'll enjoy getting old. Why should I feel unhappy about that? And yesterday I saw some sign on the side of the tram. It said something like, seniors means more sensuality. Yes, you know, I'm more mature now, so I can have what more? So everybody is being directed in the wrong way towards thinking, I can enjoy. And the lady's also thinking, I can enjoy, I can choose my this and that and this and that and so forth. But in that culture, particularly in Dwarka, when Krishna was present, his queens followed these religious injunctions. And they don't sound very religious, right? They sound like social things, they sound like moral things. But when they're practiced in relationship to Krishna himself, then they become actually religious. So it was also said on one side that when the husband is not there, the wife should turn down her shakti. And when the husband is there for the pleasure of the husband, she should make herself available in a very bright and happy way. This was the culture. The queens of Lord Krishna were all in meditation, thinking of the Lord's absence, and were always meditating upon him. So here is another interesting point about the situation with Krishna's queens, was that the reason they turned everything down on the outside was because they withdrew into the inside. They had a very, very, very powerful transcendental inner life. And most people have not very much on the inside, and so they're very busy to get things on the outside. Right? You can see this in modern society, and it's a tendency of the material world in general. So when Krishna was away, they were meditating on him. They were thinking of him in his absence, and they were meditating on him. Because the Lord's devotees cannot live for a moment without meditating on the Lord. And what to speak of the queens, who were all goddesses of fortune incarnated as queens in the pastime of the Lord in Dwarka. They can never be separated from the Lord, either by presence or by trance. So they could not be separated. If he was not physically present, they would go into a meditational trance in which they were always with him. So they were always with him. This again is the difference between the material world and the spiritual world. Because Prahlad Maharaj, he speaks about one of the characteristics of the material world is that you get separated from what is dear to you. And you get placed in the company of things that are not dear to you. And if you see in your own life and you think of other people's lives, you see all these complications actually occurring. So when we take our life and the difficulties that we have had and we look at them in a very positive way, we can see evidence, personal evidence of what Shastra is saying. Recently one devotee asked me, she said that sometimes people come up to her and say, how do you know? How do you know this is all true? And she was expressing, well, what do I say? She wasn't quite sure what you do when somebody's accusative and rather than submissive. And so we were agreeing that, really speaking, if somebody comes up to you and says to you, how do you know your religion works? If their attitude is very challenging, you really can't answer that question satisfactorily. for them, because everything you place before them, they will just defeat that, because they don't want to know how you know. They want to show you that you don't know. So that situation is difficult. But if somebody was to ask you in a simple way, how do you know that this is real? You should be able to say to them, I have read certain things, and I have seen them in my life, and I see them in the lives of so many other people. Practically speaking, I see it. So it's like I've read a guidebook, and then I look at the scenery around me, and it's all just happening there. And so that gives me the faith and the confidence to therefore try to understand what I cannot see, and what I have only got a beginning experience of, which is transcendental to my senses, to my intelligence, and to my mind. So I have confidence to go on that path because of what I can see. So here the gopis of Vrindavan could not forget the Lord when the Lord was away in the forest cowherding. When the Lord boy Krishna was absent from the village, the gopis at home used to worry about his traversing the rough ground with his soft lotus feet. By thinking thus, they were sometimes overwhelmed in trance and mortified in the heart. Such is the condition of the pure associates of the Lord. They are always in trance, and so the queens also were in trance during the absence of the Lord. So they were internalizing there the presence of Krishna with them. And now Krishna had appeared, he was returning, and as we've read in this chapter, the conch shells were sounding and the drums were playing and everyone was excited and they were running out and people were offering gifts and they were chanting so many mantras and the bards and the historians and so forth were praising Krishna with songs and making up songs, and the beautiful ladies of Dwarka were all getting very excited, and the chaste queens went up to the roof to have a look, and then they come down because Krishna has come. And they're so happy to see him. And now everything that was inside going on is now manifesting also externally. So then, presently, having seen the Lord from a distance, they at once gave up all their engagements, including the vow of women as described above. All those rules, they forgot them. But they didn't forget them because they wanted to enjoy themselves. This is the marked distinction between the material matter, material energy, and the spiritual energy. And this cannot be emphasized too much, that the difference between Krishna's eternal associates and those who are living here, residing here in the material world, is that they want to enjoy themselves, and the associates of the Lord want to be enjoyed by Krishna. To the fullest extent, they want to give Krishna the pleasure of whatever they have. So if they're beautiful, like the gopis or the queens, they dress themselves immaculately. They dress themselves more beautifully than the ladies in this realm. But they don't think as they're putting on their makeup on their eyes, or they're getting dressed in beautiful cloth, silk cloth, and jewels and so forth. They don't think, gosh, I look nice. I really love this sari. I think I'm going to wear this one more often. Like, they're not caught up in a realm of just them, but they're actually thinking, if Krishna sees my beauty, he'll become happy. It's quite different. It's funny, we can make a mental effort to adjust like that, but actually we have to completely change our center, from the center being me in my universe to the center being Krishna and his pleasure. This is the change. And this is what our Krishna conscious practices are meant to be enacting in our lives. Gradually, step by step, but systematically and very, very firmly if we practice. So then, there's one last comment here by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. who is the Acharya, has written many comments on the stories of the Srimad Bhagavatam, on the Leela of Krishna. And he often adds some sort of inner insight that's not visible from reading the verse. It's just like, say, if you were to meet some very famous man and somebody gives you some report, some commentary on him, he's very wealthy, he owns this, he has this, he's like that, and it's quite factual, it's quite accurate, it's quite impressive. But then somebody comes from his family and says, and do you know what else? He really likes blueberry ice cream. Something, little detail that actually sort of personalizes this great personality who has all these very awe-inspiring qualities. He brings out Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. He brings us closer by his comments to entering into the flavor of actually loving Krishna. So he says that there was a regular psychological reaction on the occasion. This is what took place. First, rising from their seats, although they wanted to see Krishna, they were deterred because of feminine shyness. They became very shy. But due to strong ecstasy, they were so ecstatic, they overcame that stage of weakness and became caught up with the idea of embracing the Lord, for he is their husband. He's not just an ordinary personality to them. And this thought factually made them unconscious of their surrounding environment. They forgot everything else. This prime state of ecstasy annihilated all formalities and social conventions, as we heard previously. This is the rules, you should do this, 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 and this. And those rules keep a kind of formality that keeps one very on their toes. But their ecstasy, their love, their happiness of seeing him just dissolved those things for them. And thus they escaped all stumbling blocks on the path of meeting the Lord. And that is the perfect stage of the Lord, of meeting the Lord of the soul, Sri Krishna. Now, in this paragraph, Srila Prabhupada, and this purport, Srila Prabhupada is finishing with this one sentence. That is the perfect stage of meeting the Lord of the soul, Sri Krishna. Does that mean anything to you? Meeting the Lord of the soul.
Yeah. To your previous point that we're supposed to be enjoyed by Krishna.
Yes, the Lord of the soul, yes. Anything else? Anyone else? Yes.
He's already in charge of all the souls.
Yes. He's in charge of all the souls. Anything else?
Supposedly.
Getting closer and closer. Well, I'll tell you what struck me was that we're hearing about the queens and their eternal associates of the Lord, and it's very elevated subject matter, and it's very nice to hear it and so forth, but it's very up here somewhere, kind of quite remote from my personal experience. And then this last sentence where Prabhupada says, this is the perfect stage of meeting the Lord of the soul. I started thinking, he's talking about the Lord of my Lord. He's not talking about their Lord. This is the perfection of my meeting my Lord. And that made me feel very comfortable, because then I was hearing something that was perhaps very relevant to me, not just something that was merely an exalted leela that took place a long time ago. And it's very purifying to hear it and wonderful to hear, but it's actually applying to me. So then I found a couple more things that Srila Prabhupada said on the subject. Prabhupada said, so try to establish your relationship with Krishna in any way. And that is the instructions of Srila Rupa Goswami. So any way that you establish it. So here, this particular instruction of Srila Rupa Goswami is being given in the nectar of devotion. We cannot enjoy life beyond these 12 rasas. Does anyone know what these 12 rasas are? Do you know? Yes. You. Vatisat. Yes. And seven others. Do you know the other seven? Chivalry.
Laughter.
Dread.
Ghastliness.
Anger. Wonder. Fear. Fear. And I think one is karuna or something. Compassion. I don't know if that's all seven, but it's very interesting because those are elements of day by day life. Sometimes something ghastly happens. Sometimes one becomes very frightened. Fear, we talk about fear in the material world, or there's fear in the spiritual world. And that's why there's fear in the material world. There's anger in the spiritual world, and that's why there's anger in the material world. That's very astonishing, isn't it? Because, you know, we think, oh, when I get rid of all the anger and the fear and certainly the ghastliness, can you imagine telling a nice, pious Christian who's on their way to heaven that when you get to heaven there might be some fear and anger and ghastliness there? Because their concept, the concept that motivates them is that when I get to that place, it's completely pure, it's free of all the stuff that goes on here. It's just wonderful. And you ask them, how is it wonderful? Why is it wonderful? They can't really give you much more of a definition, but they do know that the fear and the anger and the ghastliness and the dread won't be there. And here in Krishna consciousness, we have such a different conception of everything. Because we are taught that the spiritual reality, the spiritual realm, is real, but it's completely comprised of, it's totally centralized. It's all centered around Krishna. There is nothing else in the center, only Krishna. And it goes on centered around Krishna eternally and inconceivably, always expanding and already unlimited. That's the spiritual world. It has inconceivable characteristics. And then, for those jivas who don't want to be centralized, they want to center themselves around themselves, so they're all decentralized, or many, many, many centers, they can come down to the material world where they can be, play the part of being centers and godlike themselves, and the same characteristics are there in the reflection that are there in the reality. So the same qualities are all there, here, there, here and there. They're not different. But the difference is that here, the fear is in relationship to Krishna. So Mother Yasoda is worried. She's thinking, if Krishna grows up and continues to steal, then who knows what will happen to him when he becomes grown up. And her love is focused always on Krishna. And Nanda Maharaj's love is focused on Krishna. And everybody's love is focused on Krishna with a full array of emotions and experiences. Not like mind-conceived heaven idea. That heaven's up there, it's a bit airy-fairy, it's not easy to understand. And I don't know anything about it, because it doesn't have any definite characteristics that I can explain fully. And I've conceived of it by looking at this world, and there's things I don't like in this world, so they won't be there. And there's things I do like, and there'll be unlimited amount of them up there. And it's me, and I'm going to go up there and enjoy myself. Do you see the difference between the two conceptions? And then, because I'm here, maybe if I'm enjoying myself down here, I will delay my
time to go up there because it's not so tangible to me anyway. You know, and it's quite nice here. And I've got my family, and there's my mother and my father and my children and everything. So I couldn't possibly part with them. And then there's a religious conception occurs where somebody says, don't worry, you can take them all with you. Because you're so fond of them, they'll go to heaven with you. And the mass of people in the world, if they have a religious conception, it's based on this idea, this theme. After the end of my life, we will all go and enjoy somewhere permanent. But here we hear quite the opposite. This is the Vedic instruction. So you just contact the Supreme Personality of Godhead in exchange of any kind of rasa, any one of those, and you will feel pleasure. Now it's not that they're always fearful, or it's always ghastly, or that it's always they're always angry, or there's always dread. The seven secondary rasas, they interplay with the primary rasas just to increase the excitement and the pleasure and the suspense and the drama and the interest of those devotees there who are serving Krishna in their primary relationship with Krishna. So they're thinking of Krishna as their son or their friend or their lover, and sometimes these other rasas come in just to increase the excitement. So Prabhupada says, the whole life everyone is working so hard. Why? He wants some pleasure of life. But that pleasure you cannot have like a dacoit, like a dog or a hog. Don't try to take pleasure in the material world. Just look at the hog. He is also enjoying pleasure by eating stool. And that kind of pleasure will not make one happy. It may be happy for the particular body, but actually it is not happiness. If you want happiness, then you have to establish your relationship with Krishna by any of these rasas, and then you will feel happy. Does anyone have any questions? If you have no questions, I will keep reading. Yes.
I was hearing a lecture from Srila Prabhupada, and he's saying that Prahlad Maharaj is not happy when Narasimhadev is killing his father.
Yes.
So, what is that rasa? Why he is not happy? Somebody wants to kill my father. I'll be very angry. So, why Prahlad Maharaj is not angry?
Because Prahlad Maharaj, he was in full knowledge of who Lord Narasimhadev is. So he didn't see in terms of my father and why is he killing my father. He knew who was present, and he could see that this is the Lord exchanging with one of his subservient servants in a particular mood. So he remained undisturbed in that situation. And Prabhupada points that out. Normally, what would you do if somebody came to kill your father? You would be so upset. You would, of course, if you had a horrible father, you might not. If you had a horrible father who beat you all the time, you might be thinking, wow, I guess he got what he deserved. So you could say, in a sense, after Prahlad Maharaj had been almost killed by his father, attempted to kill him, murder him so many times, you could say as a material reaction he was thinking, oh, this is really good, somebody has taken care of this problem. But he never actually saw it as a problem. Because as we heard here about the queens, he was always meditating, Prahlad Maharaj was always meditating within himself. He had a very powerful inner life. And this is something that we as devotees can learn from. To remember Krishna, to think about Krishna. To try to make ourselves Krishna conscious on the inside, along with doing our daily activities and routines that are also hopefully meant for his pleasure as well.
The second part is, can you say that Brahma is Nityasiddha because he had full knowledge?
Say again?
He's a Nityasiddha.
Nityasiddha, yes. Yes, he's Nityasiddha.
Then only we can say he has full knowledge.
So he has come into this world to perform a lila, so that Lord Shrinidev can come into this world. So he has full knowledge. There's a nice quote here where Prabhupada says, he was searching out friends to talk with and joke with and to love. Krishna is sitting there for that purpose. If you love Krishna, if you make friendship with Krishna, if you love Krishna, then your life will become successful. You haven't got to search out any other friend. The friend is already there. Either you are a boy or a girl, you will find a very nice friend within yourself. And this is the yoga system, when you realize this friend. So here, having heard about the queens of Dwarka, we're hearing that Krishna is the Lord of the soul. So he's a very nice friend, and he's seated with us. And Srila Prabhupada on more than one occasion says that you can talk to him, you can experience him very tangibly. But, he adds a but, so that we won't become confused and talk to our minds instead. He says, first you have to give you have to purify your consciousness. You have to become discerning to understand what is the mind, what is Krishna's voice, what does the mind say, what does Krishna say. We have to learn this first. Otherwise, in India, you see so many people, not in Australia, nobody, but so many semi-religious people say, I know what God wants, he wants me to do this, this, and this. But in India, you see so many people who will be saying that, oh, I saw God, I saw, he said, you know, on and on and on. So we don't want to mistake our mind for Krishna, but we do want to meet, or we should want to meet, this personality who is the Lord of ourselves as souls. So do we have any more questions? Yes. I would think they would attain another place, because the characteristics that they're seeking to achieve are not all satisfied by interest heaven. So they're not following the Vedic culture, for example. So within the Vedic culture, there is so much more elaborate characteristics than what one might be following, but there must be a place, and they must be receiving as they perfect themselves in their practices. There must be a place that they go. Indra's heaven is not permanent, by the way, so it may also be for them, it may not be their final absolute destination. Yes. In the nearby stage, which means the beginning stage, when one is anything, when one is starting any new experience, it's always difficult, because it's just like, say, you're going to learn how to play the piano. There's every possibility that after one or two lessons you're going to think this is boring, because I remember this for myself. I wanted to learn to play the piano, and I went to a teacher and he said, okay, first you have to play these chords over and over and over and over for many. And if you practice at home and play the chords, of course, you'll get further advancement. But I didn't practice at home. And I was waiting to play a tune. I didn't want to play just the notes backwards and forwards for hours and hours and hours. And I couldn't really understand being a neophyte. I couldn't understand the value of being asked to play backwards and forwards. And inwardly I was thinking, I'm just a little bit better than this. Why are they making me do this? This is some kind of thing that other people have to do. But I'm sure if he would advance me quickly, I could do really, really well at this. And while I was thinking like that, I dropped the whole subject. Because the teacher was, he was not going to change the subject. He was not going to change the methodology for one impatient student who had a big ego. So he just, this is how you learn to play the piano, you don't want to learn it to you. So Prabhupada is a little bit like that too. It's like, this is the process to learn how to love Krishna. If you don't want to do it, it's up to you. So one thing is, we have to always know that I hold in my hand my own responsibility and my own independence. If I choose not to do it, it's nobody's problem except my own. We might sort of want that, oh, that's a bit uncomfortable. I'd much rather have somebody say, you have to do this because we're all relying on you. And if you don't do it, so then I can feel, oh, right, I'll try and do it. But Krishna's not like that. He's traveled with us from time immemorial as the friend in the heart. And he's just waiting patiently. So first we have to have the proper conceptions in place. As a beginner, if we want to become more advanced. Otherwise, you know it's possible to remain a beginner for a very long time. It's possible to never become more than a beginner in years and years and years of practice. I remember again as a childish personal example that at school we had to, when we were learning swimming, I didn't like swimming. And so we had to go to the primary school, we had to go to the swimming place and learn swimming. And one day, new teachers came all the time. And whenever a new teacher came and would enroll you, I would always enroll in the first class because I didn't want to go any further. And as a new teacher, they didn't know, so they put me down on the first one and in the first section, and next time I did it again. And it was kind of like a childish avoidance of maturing. Growing into something that I found was uncomfortable. So we can do this. We can stay like that. But if we see sometimes, just even at one remote moment, that if you look at your heart, you feel like, no, I actually really, it makes sense to me to make some serious spiritual advancement. If that thought ever dawns on you, then you must come here. This is what the temple is meant for. So for the neophyte, they can come here and they can stand before Gauritai, they can stand before Radha Bhavala, they can stand before Lord Jagannath and try to establish a sense of serving them. And if you don't do that, then you're missing out on the very essence of the good fortune of living in an ashram or living near a temple. Because the temple is established for that purpose. So first, before you pray to the Lord within, who sounds incredibly like our own mind, so difficult to discern, we come and we pray to Radha Bhavava, we pray to Gauritai, please give me some sign so I can understand how to proceed. Please help me with this. And those who are very, very serious, I've seen this in various times of my Krishna consciousness, those who are very serious develop a very serious inner life with the deities. They may not even become pujaris, that may not be their aptitude, but they have a very strong sense of being under the care of the deities, and whatever offering of service they do is for the pleasure of the deities. And it's quite remarkable because I watch, sometimes I see devotees just growing step by step by step by step. And I see other devotees, they stay here and they go around a few circles and they're not willing to actually participate and they're confused and so on and so forth. And I know always that, oh yes, you have to develop this inner life with the deities. There's somebody sitting right in front of me who says, I have nowhere else to go. And so they come here all the time, every day. Right? Nowhere else to go.
Yeah, I got places, but don't let them manage.
that, but I think it has something to do with the quality of the heart. Because even without money, he could go and sit on the beach all day. But he comes and sits here. So there's no other qualification actually required. And it's interesting, it's not that Krishna is looking at our qualification and saying, oh, look, that person is so intelligent, so beautiful, so all these different opulences that Krishna has, that he's looking to see, oh, that one, I like that one, they're very beautiful, I like that one. No, he's only interested in this, and I have nowhere else to go. So this is a very significant point. So our Krishna consciousness movement is giving this chance to everyone. Everyone, without any discrimination. No discrimination. And how it is purified, how one is purified, one may say that simply by hearing. How does one become purified? And then Prabhupada is answering his doubts. You know, how is that going to work for me? Prabhupada says, no. Krishna helps. Those who are hearing with attention, Krishna is within you. Krishna is so kind. Krishna is so sympathetic. Because every soul is Krishna's son. So he's very much anxious, just like a father. If a son is in difficulty, the father is more anxious. How this boy will be rescued from this difficulty? Similarly, when we are suffering in this material world, Krishna is more anxious to get us back home, back to Godhead. Therefore, as soon as he sees, this is very important, as soon as Krishna sees, oh, he is hearing about me. Oh, thank you very much, Krishna says. I shall help you. Immediately. Immediately, Prabhupada says. Immediately. He washes all the dirty things. So it might not seem that immediately all the dirty things, all the Prabhupada points to this, what is the dirty thing? The dirty thing in the heart is the misconception that I am. I am Indian, I am male, I am female, I am strong, I am weak, I am young, I am old, I am important, I am not important, I am. This is the dirty thing in the heart that Prabhupada is referring to. The sense of identification in this world. As soon as Krishna sees that somebody is hearing seriously about him, he wishes to help them to remove that. And when Prabhupada says immediately, it doesn't mean that we immediately grow wings and fly. Because two things have to happen. It's like if I think I am, what could I be? If I think I am a member of this temple, but everybody where I live is thinking that I'm supposed to come home. So I'm thinking I'm one thing. If I'm actually something else, I have to understand what I am alongside of what I am not. So then someone will come and say, but look, you've got so many things to do. You've got this, you've got that. And they'll be trying to educate me what I actually am alongside of telling me, actually, you're visiting Melbourne and it's such a wonderful place and I know you'd love to stay here, but you've got all of these duties to do here. So the same way if we think to ourselves that I'm actually visiting the material world, and I have so many duties to perform there, that we've got a correct understanding of what we are, who we are. And we have to go back there. This is the most important thing. So we need to know what I am not and what I am. So Krishna will give you information on both sides. And when you're here, you start reading differently. You start, when you're reading, you're looking for things that will help you. What is this? What is that? And we start to read actively, not reading passively. We are all eternally Krishna's loving servant. It is our constitutional position to know Krishna, to love Krishna, to surrender our lives for the pleasure of Krishna. And although we have forgotten our real life,
when we hear the glories of the Lord, when we hear the names of the Lord being spoken by great personalities who are sincerely surrendering to the mission of the Lord, that sound vibration awakens our original natural consciousness. So this is the glories of hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam and the hearing of the Srimad Bhagavatam from Srila Prabhupada and his purports and hearing it daily and regularly. Do you have any more questions? Yes.
So, in the spiritual world, everything is centralized around Krishna.
Yes.
So, what about the relationships between the different souls? Can someone become envious to another servant, that if another servant is close to Krishna? Or are there any relationships at all?
Yes, they can become envious. That's a bit disconcerting, isn't it?
Yeah.
But the envy is not like envy here. All the full array of emotions are there because they're here. If they're here, they must be there. But when they become envious, there's no envy. They don't feel like, because envy means I would like to have what you have. And how come you got it? I should have it. So their envy is different, it's transcendental. So when they see, oh, she has such and such, she has such a nice relationship, Krishna is so pleased with her, they increase their own loving mood of offering something to Krishna. There's no envy of the other person. And do they have loving relationships with each other? Then you have to ask yourself, are there loving relationships between people down here? So-called? Yes. So they're there also. But inconceivably, they're all centered on Krishna. They're serving together for the pleasure of Krishna. So there are young and old, and everyone is there. And in the material world, when Krishna appears in the material world, there are even souls who are not liberated in the dharmas, because they're coming into the dharma. They're not yet up to that full perfection. They're aspiring for the full perfection, but they're not there yet. So there are even souls like that.
So, is there, like, once a person, a soul, gets to the spiritual world, is it their final destination, or within the spiritual world they can actually change their position as well?
They can change their position, but generally it's a final destination. They're fully satisfied. You know, one of the reasons that we change is because we're not satisfied.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're satisfied, you don't need a change. But in the material world, nothing is fully satisfying, so we need to change. So there, they don't need that kind of refresh. They don't need that.
So that basically means the real self.
Yes, the real self is now loving the real absolute friend or lover, and they're unlimitedly happy in that relationship. They don't need anything beyond that. They don't have any. What else is there beyond that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that means they don't need to perform any other role, or like they're happy with their own position.
Everything they do, they do out of their natural love for Krishna. It's not, unfortunately, we can't really put it within our realm of experience. It's practically impossible to do so, because there is nothing like that here in this material world. Everybody is calculating a result for themselves from everything that they do. Even when they do religious activities, they're calculating a result for themselves. So therefore we can only hear, and we can get a vague idea by using similes from this material world. But we have to develop the faith by our chanting and by our prayer and by our own practice that there is something way, way, way beyond this material world, which is full of
results. And then we hear, we have to actually try to assimilate what we hear a little bit we can know about Krishna at this level, whilst we're still attracted to the material energy. They're like opposite, but they're like opposite in the sense of reality and a shadow, not opposite, like everything is opposite, as we would try to analyze for ourselves. And I find what helps me sometimes is if I start trying to think, well, I wonder what it would be like, and is it really going to be nice enough, and is it going to be worth all the work I'm doing, and I don't know, and the mind is rattling away. I think to myself then, I think, well, what's your problem? And if I was to speak honestly to myself, I would have to say, I'm quite attracted to the material world. You know, there's quite a few things I like. You know, I like the use of computers, and I like the this and that and that and this. So there's things that are attracting me, and that's why I'm reluctant to actually hear properly, openly, deeply, because it's something or another. Sometimes it's something very silly is attractive, but it's there. And then I think to myself, okay, so this is the reflection of the 12 rasas. There isn't anything else going on. So this is the reflection, and it's so attractive. To one small fool, it's so attractive. So imagine what the person who's created this attractiveness is like. How attractive he must be. So I try to attract my mind back towards my endeavor to understand something beyond the material world, when it turns towards the material energy and thinks that actually I can be happy here. Who made it? Think about that. You know, there's a lot said about those who created computers that become like famous people. But who created everything? He must be the most famous person. Right? Yeah? And then the atheist of the mind says, how do I know anyone created everything? It might have just been here. Oh, then we have to get out of philosophy again. Then we have to give philosophy until we can get the mind, command control over our mind and our doubts. And then we can again try to develop our attraction for Krishna. This is just not a philosophical statement, it's a personal experience of practicing Krishna consciousness. Okay, anything else? All right, thank you very much. Oh, yes, sorry.
One more. So he's satisfying the relationship, he doesn't want to change the position.
Yes.
Where does the desire to enjoy independence come from?
Well, it's an interesting thing. Srila Prabhupada speaks about this, and it's a little tiny bit inconceivable also. But the freedom to be separate from Krishna is always inherent within the jiva's makeup. Because you can't love without having freedom. Right? If you're told what you have to do all the time, you're just following somebody else's dictation. But Krishna doesn't enjoy that. He enjoys the fact that we freely, that's why he says it doesn't matter about your other qualification. He becomes attracted when he sees a jiva using his free will to offer something to him. That's very attractive to him. And it's also attractive to us. If somebody comes and gives you a gift, it's different than if somebody comes and brings you something you ask them to. You know, here it is. You may thank them but then you thank them for the service. They volunteer to give you the item. So to have that freedom is always there in the jiva. Krishna has freedom, we have freedom. So it's theoretically always conceivable that a jiva can turn towards the material energy. And Srila Prabhupada has spoken about this once in Japan. He spoke about this, and he described it as like that we are already pure. We don't have to become pure, we're already pure. And this sojourn in the material world is something like a dream. And you have to get all the it's like, or somebody playing a part in a play. You know, you have to get into the mood to play that part in the play, but that's still an actor. It's not that he becomes that part. So the soul is still remains pure, and the soul can at any time turn back towards Krishna, but they have that freedom. And this is a bit, I don't know, speaking for myself, it's a bit inconceivable. Why would we choose to come here? But then he gives a little analogy to help us a little bit, and he says that if you were a servant working for a very wealthy man, you might sometimes... Actually, I had an experience that I thought was interesting. In Vrindavan, I had a lady who washed my clothes, and she came every day, and she was quite poor. And one day I was sleeping, and I had my head kind of covered with my sari, and I was lying on the bed, and I saw her because I could see through the sari, and she knocked on the door, and I didn't want to get up. So she very, very carefully, a little impertinently, opened the door. And she sort of went, Hare Krishna? And I didn't move. And then I thought, I wonder what she's going to do now, because she's already come in. And so she came in, and she looked very timid, and she looked around the room a little bit, very quietly. And she came up very timidly to where I was. She looked at me very closely, and I was like looking eye to eye to her. You know, sorry, she couldn't see. And then she saw my glasses, and she picked them up, and she put them on. She looked through my glasses, and then she took them, and she very nicely put them back, put them there, and she left. And I was thinking to myself, that's what it's like. That's what Prabhupada says. If you're a servant of somebody, of course, this is a bad example in another sense, but if you were the servant of such a wealthy person, had everything, and everything was centered on them, it is possible. It's not likely. It's like highly, highly unlikely, and extremely rarely happens in relationship to the spiritual transcendental realm. The freedom is there that one day you might think, I wonder what it feels like to wear glasses. And then you're in the material world. And it's not like you fall down, boom, 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 boom. It's a matter of consciousness. Your consciousness is transferred to the realm where you can imagine that you're a master. And as soon as you think, actually, I don't want to be a master, this is ridiculous, then you can come back. It's not quite so tangible as that, but it's something like that. Because we can never really be separated from Krishna. He's with us now. He's there. He's in between the atoms. He's in the heart. He's saying, you have a friend within you already. We can't be separate from him, but we can feel separate from him. For the purpose of making our own endeavor to enjoy something or another that we think might make us happy. But Bhagavad Gita says in chapter 8, generally speaking, it's basically a principle that one does not fall down when one returns into the spiritual world. It's not that souls are falling all the time, like they go, whoops, and they fall off the edge of a saucer. But it's a consciousness. You have the freedom. And that's why freedom implies responsibility. And that's why Krishna says, you do what you like with your freedom. You come when you're ready. But if you turn your freedom towards him, he says, yes, let me help you. There's only one choice that we make that we're responsible for, in one sense. And that is to turn away from him or to turn towards him. And as soon as we turn away from him, the sequence of events occurs automatically. I come here because I come here and need a job. When I get a job, I get a job. Then I get a wife. Then I get children. Then I get this. Then I get that. Then I die. Then another. Then another. It's all now based on karma. It's already running by itself under the influence of the material energy. Material energy has got you now, and off you go. So the only freedom we really have is to say, I've got nowhere else to go. And therefore, I go towards Krishna. It's very interesting, isn't it? It makes everything look different when you think like this. The other way, it's just ordinary religion. Oh, please help me with this, please help me with that, please help me with this. I'm having a hard time today, please help me, please help me, please help me. But this is, how can I actually uncover my relationship with you again. It's just covered, it's still there. Yes.
I'm not sure if I heard right, and I didn't sleep at all, so
yes.
I'm just wondering, you mentioned that if we desire to cultivate glasses, we can be transferred to material world. Why do we have to be transferred to material world for experiences?
Ah, because there's only one person there with glasses. The spiritual world, the difference in the spiritual world and the material world is it's centralized. There's not even one atom, not even an atom, that is not there for Krishna's pleasure. Everything in the spiritual world is totally, everyone, the environment, the air, the atmosphere, time, everything, all the elements are all serving Krishna there. Nobody wants anything other than Krishna's pleasure. So if you even have just a little bit of something you want, then you have to go to the material world. That's where that takes place.
But the human Shastra says, for example, they say in Shastra, you have to have picture trees and whatever you desire. Okay, I mean, I cannot understand. For a small, simple thing, you want to see how the glass is, why can't you try there? It's just mischievous. That doesn't have anything to do with envy towards Krishna. You just want to see how it is, and I can't understand why you should come in this material world and suffer.
Because nobody thinks like that there. We think like that here. Why can't I find out what that is, and why can't I do this? Because we're centralized on ourselves. Everybody, look, if you think, for example, it's like if you take a box and you put someone in the box. Everything within that box is sort of their world. So when we have a mind and a body, we're always thinking only of us.
But also, for example, Madhu's thought confuses me, and when it confuses me,
yes.
It doesn't agree with me,
yes.
I don't want to argue,
yes.
I mean, I just want to,
yes,
I
yes.
Don't understand. For example, like Madhu Mandal said, I want sweets, I want to eat this. And Krishna gives me plenty of sweets. I mean,
but he doesn't think of I want sweets for his own pleasure. This is what why
it's more sweets than
that's why we can't go there yet, is because we see Krishna's pastimes through our material eyes. And until we actually, and then if we don't study through the teachings of the Shastra thoroughly enough before seeing the pastime, we'll see, oh, Radharani's beautiful, I'm also, I like to be beautiful for Krishna, and I like this and I like that. And subtly, we won't make that transition to what does Krishna want. It will be, I want to do this for Krishna, I want to do this for Krishna. And here in the material world, it's different than how they think there.
Yeah, I understand, but that's kind of envy, that's real envy. Why Krishna or why Radharani, why not me?
Yes.
If you just want to experience how the glasses look like.
Why should you take the glasses? I nearly fired her after that. Why should she walk into my room and take my glasses? What will she take next?
Whose glasses?
I gave you an analogy that the servant walks into the room thinking that you're asleep and takes your glasses and tries them on. The next thing you do is you fire her.
Really?
I did.
Because of the glasses?
Yes.
She put them on and she paid them off?
Yes.
And at the end,
because she thought I was asleep, and I saw what she did when she thought I was asleep. Now what if she comes in tomorrow when she's bringing in the clothes and takes some money? How can I trust her? But this is because we may have our idea, but Krishna also has a system in place, and after you do something, you get the result of that. So if we say, why can't I be there? I have some independent desires of my own. Why can't I be there and have my independence? What's the problem? You know, I'm a nice person. I only do good things. So let me be there and have my independence. That means that you're going to have your independence, and Krishna has. He's no longer autocratic, but he is by definition autocratic in the spiritual realm. And if you don't want to accept that, he makes arrangements lovingly
for somebody who wants to experience, he lovingly makes arrangements, but they have to follow his arrangements because that's his position as God. It's simple. Yes.
It's a nice analogy. Yeah.
Yes.
About the glass and the light. That was with the sense of being, was thinking.
Yes, you have glasses.
I,
white colour. Yeah. Yes.
Yes. But I was, there was a in the back of the year, Krishna says that he's covered by the curtain of the open mind. In one sense, she was couldn't see you.
Yes.
You were covered by the cloud.
Yes.
In the same way, we can't see Krishna.
Yes.
But Krishna's looking at us.
Yes. Very
nicely
said. Yes, that's right. Krishna's looking at us, and because we can't see him, we feel like he's not looking at me. Isn't it? That's what, at least for myself, I'm
imitating him. He's watching through the veil, but we can't see him.
That's right. And it's not like he's offended. I didn't respond to her offendedly, like, how dare you do this to me? But I understood, as you understand, if you understand their culture, that if she's a paid servant and she's only been working for a short time, she's not like a family member, that she's not reliable if she does that. She could do anything else as well. So maybe Krishna thinks like that about us too, that we're not reliable yet. but yeah, he thinks out of love in that way, not in a cold, callous way, but we're not yet mature enough. And I think if you think about it, it makes sense that, yes, I'm not really quite ready to go back to the spiritual world yet because it would take a little bit more purification and a little bit more knowing Krishna and understanding my relationship with him and developing that sense of giving everything. And I'm not quite there yet, so that we continue to practice and hear about him, and he will assist from his side. And step by step, we'll go forward. Is anyone else? Do you have more you want to add to that?
I can't understand what that servant actually stole the glass, or was it just the demon and the demon?
She came into the room, and as Gangeshwar Prabhu was saying, she couldn't see me. She didn't know that I was watching her. She came into the room without permission, because she knocked on the door and I didn't answer, and she could have gone away, but she came into the room to see what was going on, and then she became attracted to my glasses, which were seated on the bed, and when she saw the glasses, she just wanted to try what it was like to have glasses like that, so she put the glasses on. So I was watching her, so then I could understand that if she could be attracted to the glasses and put them on, she could also be attracted to many other things as well. So as a servant, because that's her function at that moment, it's outside of her role to try to do that. So similarly with us, we're serving, but we're not pure yet, and so therefore we're always also thinking of what Krishna should be doing for us. It's natural at our stage, but there is a stage where that's completely absent. That's what we hear about.
But she didn't steal them,
but she could have. Do you see what I mean? So we may say, I'm innocent, I just, whatever. I could have done such and such, but I just do this. But Krishna may choose to view us as being still requiring some more training spiritually. Well, I think we'll stop here. If there are any other questions, we